We have been talking with our guest, David Politis, the incredible cases, missing cases of people, some of them showing up dead. Missing 411 next on Coast to Coast AM, your calls. Welcome back to Coast, David Politis with us, of course, Missing 411, the devil's in the detail, and also North America and beyond. David, is this happening in other countries?
It seems like every year we can add another one, but right now we're at 9 countries, predominantly Canada, Australia, UK, New Zealand. Those are the biggies.
And most of them in parks or out there in the forests?
Yep.
Have there been reports of UFOs or anything strange like that in the area at the time of the disappearance?
We always look for those, and so far, no.
In your opinion, what would you rule out as possibilities? Given the fact that everything is occurring, possibly, what would you rule out generally?
You know, George, living in this environment like you and I do and around people like we were yesterday, you can't rule out that it's our government or it's some type of organized group at the government level using some super advanced technology, because we don't really know what they have. So I don't even want to say it's not human advanced government intervention and some kind of, I don't know, plan to take us for some reason. Or if, you know, the common ones, aliens, things living underground, things living in rocks, fairies, little people. I've heard it all. So I really couldn't say anything other than it's not your typical serial killer walking the trails doing it. That I would rule out.
In myth, there's been talk of fairies that would abduct people, take them. Do you hear that?
Well, I've written about it. Because I'm not somebody that's going to walk away from a good backed up story that's related mythology, and there's stories of fairies that have taken people, and Jacques Vallée has written about associated things before, and
yes.
you hear about people living in and under boulders, and to the point where in Iceland, this is true now, they will move a road and put a road around a giant boulder to not disturb what's living inside.
Now, that's weird.
Yeah.
That is weird.
When I first watched the YouTube about it, I thought it was a joke until I started to do the research on it. No, they're serious.
Have you seen the video of those walking boulders?
I haven't seen that.
In the desert, you could actually see a boulder with track marks where it moved, like it walked 50 feet. It's bizarre. It really is. David, before we go to calls, tell us again about your Kickstarter campaign for Missing 411, the movie.
So you, the listeners, and fans of the books have all said, hey, let's put this in a visual medium. And the reason being is that these disappearances have occurred at some of the most beautiful places in the world. What we decided to do was film the stories of the victims in 4K, the most vibrant footage we could find. It cost us a lot of money to do it. We did it. We're about a third of the way through. It's unbelievably gorgeous. You can see it on the trailer, Kickstarter.com. Look at Missing 411, the trailer. The guys have done a phenomenal job. We need to finish it. And we need every coast-to-coast viewer, listener, to go in, and if everybody just donated $5, we'd make it. The smaller the amount, it doesn't matter. As long as you can just pledge and help us, we would be very grateful.
You're excited about this.
I am very excited about it, George. I know what we've done up to now. I know the interviews we've received. I know that the people we've contacted. And I can tell you right now, even the guys have said this. Up to this point, we are batting 1,000. And the victims that we've contacted, search and rescue people that we've interviewed, everybody thinks this is super, super compelling stuff.
And you can find it on Kickstarter by just putting in the search engine, Missing 411. It's that simple. And you've got, what, 26 days to go, I see.
Yeah, we've got some good time yet.
Let's go for it. I want to see that movie. Okay, let's go to the phones. Robert's in Baltimore, Maryland, to get things started on the wild card line. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you. David and George, one thing seems terribly obvious, that there are parallels here with alien abductions, particularly in regard to the issue of disclosure. We know that the government does not want the public to be talking about abductions because that's one of the scariest things there are for the public to hear. So they're restricting the discussion of it to the cable channels and to a limited dispersion of the information. And in your talking about the FBI agent committing suicide, it reminds me of the other people in alien abductions that have also been said to have committed suicide, where it's fairly well known that they were murdered from other evidence. And in the case of the Park Bureau, they're under control of certain government leadership, which probably, this is a guess, that the CIA, in wanting to keep this suppressed, would also be talking to the leadership, the management of the Park Service, and telling them that they are not to talk about this, just as they have people in the New York Times and they have people in the major media, of the television media, not to talk about these things on a public scale, on a national scale. They want it restricted to... I mean, I think they're doing disclosure, George, but I think they're doing it very slowly. That they call a leaking, leaking it out,
because
they feel the public should know, but they can't be told all at once. Doesn't this fit into that pattern very much? Isn't it pretty much the same story? Don't you see all the parallels when people are disappearing, the bloodhounds don't find them? Of course they don't find them, because they've been taken through probably the same way the abductees are taken. They're lifted off without any residue being left in the ground for the bloodhounds to follow.
David, do you see any parallels there?
Well, you're too humble to say it, but yesterday, after I gave the interview to you, you had a guest on that just knocked me off my feet when we met outside and discussed. And he said, "Dave, your missing cases parallel what I'm going to talk to George about."
And his stuff was scary, horribly scary. But I've never heard you commit yet, David. Not yet to that theory.
No, I try to keep an open mind to everything.
I mean, I guess we could say that whatever is happening, it's probably the strangest case as a journalist I've ever heard, you've ever heard. It's just darn right strange.
It's baffling, George.
Yeah. First time caller, Gina in Denver, Colorado, where we were just there yesterday. Gina, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you, gentlemen. Thank
you
for taking my call. I'm a little shooken up, and I've been trying to figure out a cause of what happened to me in 2011, and a lot of paranormal things have happened to me since then. And I was in that exact park that Mr. Politis just mentioned. It's pronounced Chiricahua National Monument, and I'm realizing tonight, listening to you guys, that I'm basically a survivor.
What happened, Gina?
The background of it, I'll be more than happy to tell you guys offline, because it may help you quite a bit. I was involved with a very dark individual, and I am of light. We were doing a trip where we had to go out of our way, and we went near Chiricahua. We had no intention of going there, and the closer we got, different things on the radio, different events to us, different things that happened in our lives recently started having this deja vu kind of effect. We decided to go off the highway, and it was Chiricahua. Now, as we went through, it was very quiet, and we got pulled. That's the thing. It's a very intriguing, pulling, locking in kind of feeling. What I can tell you, and Mr. Politis, I don't know if you've looked at this, It was definitely, without a doubt, some sort of vortex bubble that we went into. If you've ever looked into ley lines, you might want to look into that. I have no idea if ley lines go across Chiricahua, but I even noticed the mile marker of where we went in once you entered.
Gina, did you go through this vortex?
Yes, and it was a very definable mile marker, and I thank God that when we left, it was so incredible. I grabbed paper and started taking notes right away, and I have them at home.
How did you get back?
We were in our truck most of the time as we went into this park. It was a weekend. There should have been people everywhere. You know, you could see lights in people's tents, and it was a time of evening and night where people would be out. The rangers would be out. Nobody was out. There was no wind. There was no insects. We even went into an area that would not allow us to be. When we drove up to the park, it was after hours. The bar should have been down. It was up, and it just, we took a wrong turn. We went right by where the rangers, like cabins and such, where they sleep, and just paranormal after paranormal would happen and would pull you in. You look up at the sky, and it is the most surreal. The person I was with, he and I don't even know how to describe it. It was the most surreal thing you've ever seen in your life. And what was there was not human. This is not a serial killer. This is some sort of very dark spiritual UFO thing. It did manifest. It did come towards us. And this guy I was with even said, he's like, stars don't move like that. And we got really spooked and went into our truck, and we were looking backwards over the back of our seat. And it kept pulling me out, meaning the intrigue, the pull to see it, the pull to know it. It presented itself as beauty.
Was there a sound to it? Was it, you know, screaming or anything
silence.
Like that?
That's the thing. Not a cricket, not an insect. Not a breeze, not a sound, not a person.
How were you able to pull yourself and get away?
Well, I told he was terrified, and the weird thing is this has some sort of Native American Holy Land thing to it, and I am by no means saying that a Native American dark thing connected to that. I'm not saying that. I even have Native American in my mind.
No, I understand.
So did he.
I understand. But, I mean, but Gina, how did you pull yourself out of way? How did you get away?
Well, we were in the truck, and I was keep pulling to get out. And he did not want me to, and I said, I have to. And I said, just hold my hand. So I opened my truck door, and he stayed in, and he held my hand. And this thing, these stars basically manifested and would move in a manner that things cannot move. And like instantly was at the back of the truck, manifesting into, I don't even know how to describe it. And then I realized that's close enough, and I got in. I was like, we got
to
go.
Well, let's bring in the expert for a second here, David. David, she seems to have been able to escape, which not a lot of people have been able to do.
Well, to me, what's fascinating about what Gina said is that there are 8 cases in my books where a car is found on the side of the road, abandoned, sometimes just off the side of the road a little bit, in an area that doesn't make any sense, and the person's out of the car and they're gone. And when she said she felt like she had to get out of the car, that's the part that I started to listen pretty intently to.
How come?
And because what doesn't make sense in the incidents I wrote about is why the person pulled over at that location, why they got out of the car, and why they left. Pretty interesting.
It is. It is. Now, let's assume for a moment that there are vortexes, because we've talked about that as a possibility, that people stumble into them, but that on the other side of the vortex or the dimension, whatever it might be these demonic types of entities that she kind of described, not necessarily physical, that have the ability to pull people in, and maybe that's what's happening to them. And then after whatever they've done with people, months later, they kind of spit them back out. Possible?
Well, I think the demonic side of things fits with a lot of religious writings and people's beliefs that I've talked about in the last 6 years. I hear that pretty regularly. And her description that it was dark, that kind of fits with what other people have written to me about.
If she needs the contact unit, sounds like she wants to, off air, can she email you through your websites?
Absolutely. It's on the Coast to Coast site, canammissing.com, and there is a contact point for it.
Okay, great. Gina, be well, and definitely get a hold of David, if you would. Let's go to Westlake in Oregon. Mark's with us. Welcome to the show, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh, gee, thank you, George.
Hey, Mark.
Hello to you and David.
You too.
Well, you know, I've got three or four items I think are highly relevant here in one way or another, and I'll try to get through them as quick as I can.
Okay, and if we hit the break, I'll keep you over.
Well, thank you, George. Actually, David, you can get larger contributions probably by far than the overall average grassroots can afford these days to make contributions. And if you're interested in speeding up the time frame to when you can actually go into production with your sure-to-be-a-hit movie, I think, with this subject matter, you can go to Fund My Flick. Fund, F-U-N-D, My Flick, F-L-I-C-K.com, and that was set up by Max Kaiser, as in Kaiser Wilhelm, Max Kaiser, going back probably 5 years, and he's very reputable and very much a success himself, but people will buy shares in your movie, from what I've gathered, as he described it in the past that I heard, and you will have shareholders as opposed to pure donors. So it may not be the thing for you if you want to keep, you're running and you want to keep your profit margin at a certain level. But it would be a way to really move it into production very quickly, I think. But beyond that, I wanted to ask you a question, David, and then if there's time, I'd like to make a comment in the overall aspect of what's going on here relative to the evidence, which has really been certified. But I was wondering, you went over percentages of how many people are never found, and I believe you said 80%. 20% are found, and I'm curious as to, of that 20%, how many people are actually found alive? I know you said a very high percentage of those that do survive it have had prior disabilities to the occurrence of it, so they're not able to talk very well or at all.
So of the 20%, David, that are found dead, how many?
Or that are found at all.
Or found at all.
How many are actually alive?
Small percentage that would come back and actually be able to explain it.
Yes. And it's obvious that murder is being done here. At least from the ones that have been found, when you find a skull cap, and you find a tooth on top of a log, seems like they're flaunting this at times, setting things up to really make a statement, it seems to me. I get the feeling they're saying at times when they leave this blatant evidence there that we're doing this and there's nothing that you can do about it. And it's very sinister. If you'll remember, David, I think it was time before last when you came on Coast to Coast and were interviewed by George. One young man called in, and I think he had been in the Los Padres National Forest. It was somewhere in Southern California, I believe. And he reported that he had been with a friend out in the National Forest, and they did see a very strange craft go overhead. I forget his description of it, but it was kind of a bizarre looking thing, and it wasn't that large as UFOs at times are reported to be. It was and went very slowly over them, and they just I think they basically said a prayer and blessed themselves, and it went on, and they got out of there very quickly. There was another report, I think, on that same program of, I think you went over this, a man saw his dog running through the brush. And he had a line of sight to the dog between the bushes.
Hold on for a sec. We'll hit the break, and we'll come back and talk about that dog story. Well, a couple little notes. We are 500 short of hitting 17,000 members for ParanormalDate.com, so jump on board and do that if you haven't already. It is free to join up there. And also some events coming up in August. I'm going to be in Edinburgh, Texas, and in Toronto, Canada, at a major event. So if you want to come out and see us, simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. Right in the highlight reel, you'll find all those events. Welcome back to Coast, David Paulides with us. David, the case he was talking about the animal and the dog story, do we get many of those cases where animals either disappear or that they bark because they sense something?
There are probably over 200 cases I've written about in the books where a person disappears simultaneously while they're out walking their dog.
While they're out walking the dog.
Sometimes the dog comes back, sometimes
not. Sometimes not. I am just wondering, and I'm trying to picture the horror of whatever goes through and happens to these people. What they witness, what they see. My God, if they could ever only tell us.
I think Gina offered a pretty good visual.
Yeah, I think so. How close do you think she is to what you think might be happening?
Well, I've heard that story before, or very similar offshoots before, and a lot of times it comes from people who really don't have a deep religious background, yet they tell a pretty compelling story.
They sure do. Okay, let's go back to the calls. This half hour is going to go by very fast. Glenn is truck driving in Decatur, Illinois. Hi, Glenn. Welcome to the program. You're on the air with us.
Hi, George. Hey, Dave.
Hi there.
I just wanted to know if any park rangers or any, you know, like troopers, anything like that out there have ever been gone missing.
Now, that's an interesting question. Any of the employees of the parks, are they gone?
Well, Paul Fugate is the only national park ranger that's missing to date and has never been found. There was another ranger named Randy Morganson that I wrote about that disappeared in Sequoia Kings Canyon National Park. And he was eventually found in an area that nobody thought he'd ever be in. His remains were found, and the circumstances of how he was found, where he was found, and what they found are all very, very unusual.
We haven't talked yet about the little 9-year-old boy, Omarion Humphrey.
Yes.
Can you tell us that story?
So Omarion is one of the cases where the boy has an extreme disability. He was at a park swimming with friends or vacationing with friends just on a day trip.
And this is in Michigan, isn't it?
Right, right.
One of the strange places because that's in the Midwest.
Right, and that's actually an area where we've had other people disappear within 100 miles of there, and the place was Davison Township in Michigan, and he was 9 years old, autistic. And parents turned around, he was gone. And there was a man-made lake there, and it's not that old. And when I talk about a man-made lake, that's important because the bottom is dead flat. There's nothing on the bottom of the lake, nothing on the sides of the lake. You can easily see across it. Make a long story short, the search and rescue teams went in there, and they searched that lake 6 times. And they even brought in side-scanning sonar twice. And they said that the bottom of the lake was absolutely clean. There was nothing in the lake. And after 6 days of searching, they said, okay, we're going to let the public back in. He's not here. And what happens on that 7th day? Somebody finds Omarion in the lake.
Yeah.
Now, that is not wholly uncommon in this world because it goes back to the boy was found in an area that was previously searched that I've written about many times. He's an autistic boy, something I've written about a lot. And it's hard for me to believe that the search teams missed him because if it was in a big lake, if there was a lot of obstacles on the bottom, yeah, then there's a real good chance. But that wasn't the scenario here. And the parents were dumbfounded that he was found, and the public was staring at law enforcement saying, how could this happen?
Are there other cases where people disappear or they show up murdered or dead in the same area?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Now, that's intriguing.
Now, murdered where they're dropped and they have head injuries, kind of like what we've talked about? Yes. And if not in the immediate, if not in the exact area, in the immediate area, yes.
Jeez.
And the point you, some, you or somebody else was making earlier about, it's almost as though somebody does want to make a point that we will put this person right back. It will be seen. You will know about it.
And you, there's nothing you could do about it.
You, and I've been called 100 times about the similarities between what I just said and cattle mutilations.
They've stepped up the game a little bit, haven't they?
It would seem that there are some parallels there.
Next up, we go to Mayat in New York. Hey, Mayat, welcome to the show.
Yes, good morning. Great show, David and George. It certainly is intriguing, and you feel so comfy hearing all this, the safe at home. I have a two-parter for David, and I want to say that Gina might be on the right track because the History 2 channel has done some programming on vortices, so we'll be looking forward to David exploring that. But I want David first to talk about some of the incidents and patterns outside of North America. And I also want him to speak on, he mentioned the intellectuals, the brainiacs. You know, that's a commonality, a pattern. And I listen over the air. I'd like to know if he's been able to ascertain any other commonalities, either of the children or of the adults. And I'll listen over the air. Thank you for the program, George.
Okay, Maya, sure thing.
So talking about other countries, we'll talk about Australia briefly. They have the disappearances of young children just like we do in the U.S. And when I first started to look at it, I was overwhelmed at the consistency amongst the stories along with U.S. stories. And some of the phenomenal things is the distances that some of these young kids allegedly travel. And we're talking about going through bush country and they're found 40 miles away days later, alive and well, and search and rescue people are saying, whoa, we weren't even looking for him way out there. How did he get there? And there's just not one story like that. There are many. There's also stories inside of Australia national parks. There is another consistency is that national parks in other countries have the same issues that we have in our national parks. Australia has them. New Zealand has them. Canada has them. So that's a perplexing thing that I can't quite get my handle around.
David, does it cross racial bounds at all? I mean, is there a predominant set of racial mixture in these disappearances?
So when they talk about a person's heritage, the number one group that comes up above all others is Germans.
German people disappearing more than anybody? That's weird.
Now, you got to understand that the vast majority of the time when somebody goes missing, they don't say Italian-American.
No, never.
Luigi. But when they do mention it, it's German more times than not.
That is strange. What about sex?
Predominantly males.
Males, German, how about age?
That's kind of all over the map. I would say probably the one group that seems to be the least affected by this is males somewhere between 35 and 45, 50, right in that bracket.
What about much older people? Do they disappear?
Surprisingly, yes. Some very old, a lot of the older people that disappear, they're never found, and a large percentage of those have dementia. And you would think that if somebody has dementia, you're still going to be able to find them with forward-looking radar and such. But many, many times, they are never found.
Well, with David Politis talking about his works, Missing 411, David, what do the family members generally say about the disappearances? They know the people better than anybody. What do they say?
Most common things, I can't believe that they got away, talking about kids, I can't believe they got away from us that quickly, or I just turned my back for a second and they were gone. The older adults, unfortunately, a lot of times when you talk to them, they're not happy with the, not necessarily the search and rescue people, they're not happy with the administration that's servicing the park, their communication, the support. More times than not, it's not a good situation.
And some of the people who disappear, nobody ever hears, you know, them say, "Hey, I'm over here." Nothing like that, is there?
No, never.
It's almost as if from the instant they have disappeared, something has happened to them pretty darn fast, where they can't scream, they can't say anything. That's strange all by itself. They seem to be muffled or something, where they just can't emit any sounds.
Well, that's one thing I've never read anywhere, you know, that you hear a muffled help or a muffled anything. It seems as though it's like what you said. It's instantaneous and they're gone.
Yeah. If I were behind all of you in a group and somebody tried grabbing me, you'd at least hear a scuffle or, you know, "David, get over here," something.
Absolutely.
Doesn't make any sense. Let's go to Norwalk, California. Andy's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Andy. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Shabba, David. I really enjoy this subject because I had an experience about 30 to 35 years ago in the Oroville, California wilderness area. And to make a long story short, one of your guests, previous callers in, made an interesting statement about the, it's almost like they're trying to show their capabilities, because I was walking down this wilderness trail 30 to 35 years ago and alongside a mountain, and what happened was I had two dogs with me, a Samoyed Husky and an Irish Setter. As one was walking in front of me down this narrow, very narrow trail, to the right of me was the drop, which was like several hundred feet down, and to the left of me on this narrow trail was a mountainside. Well, anyway, I'm walking down this trail for approximately 6-7 minutes, maybe a little bit more, a little less, and what happened was all of a sudden I turned around and my Irish Setter behind me was no longer there. So I've always been, you know, taught in the military never to panic and keep a cool head and think very clearly. And what happened was I started backtracking real slowly. About 20 to 30 feet behind me, I'm looking over the cliff, and my dog, my Irish Setter, is hanging on a ledge, which was approximately 30 to 36 inches, I'm guessing now, and it was approximately 2 feet wide. And that dog had dropped down approximately closer to 6 feet down, with its upper paw was holding onto the ledge, on right paw, and the back paw was on the very tip of the ledge, and the dog was very frightened. So I told the dog, "Buddy, you hang in there, I'll be right back." So I real slowly walked about 20 feet, and then I ran from that point on with the other dog behind me. Got to my car, I had a 79 Ford Thunderbird, popped the hood, praying along the way, praying, nonstop praying, "Our Father who art in heaven." And when I popped the hood, pulled the long nylon rope that I had as a precaution in case something happened. And as I'm starting back, I took like maybe 10 steps, the dog comes running to me with its tail wagging back and forth like crazy, so happy. It was a physical impossibility for that dog to lift itself up, but I believe something placed that dog there for me to see, like they've got the power. And I don't think it's likely that the dog could have slipped without going over that ledge. I think something like placed it there. And I can tell you this, I'll never go back to that trail again. And I'm a combat veteran from the infantry in Vietnam. I will never walk that trail again, because whatever it is, I think it's supernatural. And I can, you know, take a lie detector test. I'm telling the absolute truth. So
I believe you. You can tell David when some people are telling the truth or not. He's telling the truth. Spot on.
Thank God the dog was okay.
What has been for you, in the waning moments we have here, the most heart-wrenching part of your investigation?
Oh, 100% the families
of
the victims. And
they just don't understand, do they?
They don't understand, and they're not getting any help, and they're not getting any visibility, and their case is not getting any attention. And the stories that we talk about on this show, George, the reality is that there's nobody else out there that's talking about it.
You know there isn't. I mean, this you would think would be a huge story, and it's not. It is on this program, always will be. But, you know, you would think mainstream would pick this up. They won't.
And that's probably another part of it that the victims' families don't understand, because they're people just from mainstream society, and they get victimized like that, and people just want to wash their hands of it, and they don't want to talk about it.
You remember the movie Close Encounters of the Third Kind, when the military took over the region, and you saw a lot of dead cows all over the place? Is that happening here? Do you see a lot of military or strange activity by feds in any of these areas?
I honestly have tried to listen for that, you know, pay attention if it is happening. I've never heard of it.
Let's go to Dolores now in Hamburg, New York, east of the Rockies. Hi, Dolores. Go ahead.
Hi. Quick talk.
Got it.
And then a couple questions, if I may. Thank you. I heard about this last year. Both my families went in two different directions for vacations. One, Yosemite. The other one, Canadian fishing trip, accessible way up only by float plane. The 11-year-old grandson was walking back from his cabin alone to the main house for dinner, and he told the story where he saw a thing that was all hairy behind a tree looking at him. His parents, he didn't say anything, but when he got to the cabin, he was a non-talker. He didn't talk. You know, he's not a... Anyway, he proceeded to stand up in front of the cabin of all the other people that were there, total strangers, and told the story about the creature. And I questioned him, and he said he was very big, and he said he was all covered with hair. It was all covered with hair. He was calling it in. And I said, was there anything else that was strange about it? He said, oh, the smell was terrible.
See, that's a classic Bigfoot case. That's a sighting. All these things seem to be happening all at one time. David, thanks again for being on the program.
George, it's always my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Ladasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, and George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.